10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have ignition. We have liftoff. Out and about is a go. All systems are nominal.
Well, hey, yes, indeed. All systems are nominal. You are listening to Out and About. I am your host, Captain DJ Mave, and you are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 and 92.3 FM. What a beautiful day out there, and I'm so glad that you were able to tune in, because I have, oh my gosh, you know, I always say this, I always say, oh, we've got a I hope they can hear this microphone thing squeaking, because it sounds like I'm opening up a coffin.
Yes, it's scary in here, people. It's yes, scary.
It's scary. But I have Eve Lupert here with me today. And Eve is a celebrity around Spokane and a great actor. And she's amazing. And I think she's here because of some, you know, you read about the court-ordered sentencing for some of these celebrities. Mm-hmm. And I think this is probably, what did you do, Eve, to have to come on my show?
Well, this is my community service.
Yeah.
I went to the stage left gala.
Yeah.
And I had a couple of cocktails.
Oh, no.
And then they bid for an opportunity to be on your show. Yeah. And I had just enough to drink to think, well, I'd be charming at that. I raised my hand and sent them the money. So here we are.
Yeah, you won the bidding war. Yeah. And then
it was intense.
And then, you know, probably if we had just kept the camera on you, it was probably right after that, you probably face planted.
No, but I did apologize to Jeremy. He's like, I might have been a little chatty while you were talking up there.
I loved the gala because it was like that. I mean, people were, it was almost like a Rocky Horror Picture Show, because yeah, people were giving cat calls from the audience and hooting, and it was so much fun.
It was so fun.
Yeah.
It was so fun. I had fun, although I'm not sure that was anyone's intent, but that's what I did anyway. So,
well, yeah. I think I had fun too. I had fun too. And that was, gosh, like a month ago. And you've been traveling all over the place since then.
Yeah.
And first of all, I need to say happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
And how was yesterday? Was your birthday?
Yesterday was my birthday. And, you know, I'm of the age where a little lower key may be fine.
Yeah.
And my dreamy fellow Binky decided we would go out to dinner, and we were going to go to a Vietnamese place that he likes. And we went out there, and it was closed because it was Monday. So, you know, now he's devastated because he's planned this and he's very excited. And I'm trying not to be disappointed.
He did the work. Yeah. He did the work.
Except for calling to check if it was open.
Oh, but, well, okay. Kind of did the work.
I wouldn't think of that.
No, I wouldn't.
But I was pouty. I was trying not to be, you know, I was trying to be gracious and everything.
Right.
But it was my birthday. And
yeah.
It's
a PTSD situation here.
It's so sad.
I'm handing Eve a Kleenex right now.
It was really sad, you guys. Anyway,
to pull yourself back together.
Well, that's me. And then we went someplace else. It was packed, so we did the most perfect thing. We went home and ordered Chinese food, and it was perfect. I put on my nightie and had dinner in my nightie for my birthday.
That
was perfect.
That sounds really good.
It was.
You know, do you have a TV set in your bedroom, or do you just sit out in the living room and watch it?
The living room. It's a small apartment.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Because I have a friend, and she has a big screen TV. And one of the things she likes to do is she has this clam dip recipe, which she gave to me, which is amazing. But she sits in her bed and watches TV and eats potato chips with clam dip.
Oh, that's so nice.
Doesn't that sound good?
Yeah, I've had a traumatic experience with clam dip. I once went to a party when I was living in New York, and it was all these people, all these actors, I only knew the hostess and her spouse or her partner. And so I go in and I'm graciously introducing myself, and I walk through the living room with my hand out and step right in a gigantic bowl of clam dip, which was on the, you know, apartments in New York aren't very big, so you're using every space. So
right.
Yeah.
So was it on the floor then?
Yeah. So to a lot of people, I'm a clam dip girl.
Oh.
Yeah.
Just follow the tracks.
right into it.
You know, I have a bad experience with clam dip too.
See? Yeah.
But this was kind of because of some drunken revelry.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So I thought it would be fun. I thought it would be fun to load up. We were playing badminton, to load up the birdie with clam dip and hit it. And it was at my son's house. He has a brand new house, you know, and I mean, you know, new to them and their first house. And I believe it was his mother-in-law's mom that got the brunt of clam dip all over her. It was just a bad timing of her walking. And, you know, it was like, oh, you know, that's one of those things. I just, you know, I have a memory of doing bad things with snack food whilst drunk. So
I spend money irrationally when I'm drunk.
Do you go like on Facebook or on Amazon?
I have a TV problem, and I'm not afraid to admit it. And I like, you know, I mean, politically they're just disgusting, but
yeah,
they have earrings for $1.95.
Oh,
I so know. Hello, yeah, no.
How long does it take you to get that stuff from them?
3 weeks, 2 weeks.
You know, and I think that's okay. I think it's all about the dopamine rush.
It is.
Because I get a lot of all my art supplies I will get at Spokane Art Supply,
yeah,
aptly named store. But there's weird stuff that sometimes I need. Like I've been doing this stuff with this foam clay, and I've never seen that there. And
that.
Yeah. And so I've been, and of course, then my grandkids want some. But I've been ordering that off of Amazon. So,
yeah.
But I get like that dopamine rush when that package hits. And it's just like when you're, you know, you and I are close to the same age, I think. And it was like when you got something in the mail.
That's not a bill. That
could keep you going for months.
Yeah. Well, during COVID, if I didn't get packages from Amazon, I wasn't sure if I was alive. That was how I confirmed I was still a living being.
Yeah.
Is that I was able to order and receive things from Amazon.
Yeah.
So I just haven't been able to let it go.
Yeah. But I think was it Temu you said that you buy from?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a good one because 3 weeks. And I'll buy a lot of used books from Abe Books.
Yeah.
If they don't have it at Auntie's, I don't go to Amazon. I go to Abe Books. And those are really great because they can come anywhere from like a week to a month.
Yeah.
And that's wonderful.
And so it's like, and what is this? That happened today. I got a package today and I thought, what on earth is this?
Yeah.
And I ordered it when I was traveling because I bought these clay flowers. I was in Budapest for a couple weeks and I bought these beautiful clay flowers and I thought, I need a vase to go with that. Now I have vases, but I didn't have a new vase to go with it. So I got on Temu and ordered two vases for, you know, nothing.
Yeah.
And they're nice.
Yeah. And, you know, oh, they're made in China. Well, what isn't?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's how it is. So I wanted to talk a little bit about your trip and, you know, let's start off. So when you bought these flowers, did you ship them back? Did you carry them back with you?
No, they were small. They all would fit into into a vase, and they're they're pretty small little flowers. And
okay.
I generally don't buy stuff I have to ship when I go.
Yeah,
when I travel, I always buy a little necklace piece to hang on a chain.
Okay,
because I can always enjoy wearing it, and it's easy to pack. So
yeah,
every trip I have.
That's
like
smart.
That's
where we used to get our kids shot glasses because you know they're always
you
see some day kids.
You want to encourage the kids to drink.
Yeah, we do.
You know,
we do.
They might not find it on their own.
Yeah, they because you know, I would hate for them to discover that kind of stuff on the street.
No, yeah,
you know,
no. If you can't vomit in your own bathroom the first time, your life is not all it should be. Your parenting is failing.
It is. You're right. Yeah. And I would hang my head in shame if that were to happen.
Yeah, thank
so,
God.
So let's see. So I know you went to Amsterdam.
I went to I flew through Amsterdam.
Oh, yeah. So did you spend any time in the Netherlands?
No, I hate that airport. No, I spent as little time as possible.
Yeah, it's got a good name to it. I mean,
Schiphol.
Yeah. Yeah, Schiphol, and which I don't have to bleep out because that's the name of the I don't have to name it, but it's very close to that. But
it's horrible.
Yeah, it's big and it's confusing.
It's huge. I've sort of had a traveling breakthrough in the last year or so. I've had some health issues, And so I get really tired really fast. So I decided to try that whole, you know, handicap wheelchair thing.
Yeah.
Jeez, I'm telling you.
Really?
Oh, my God.
Do you have to show any documentation?
No, you just waddle up there and kind of grab your hip a little bit and go, ugh.
Okay.
But particularly with international flights, they have special lines to get you through customs. And I mean, it's just like zoom, zoom, zoom.
Do you have to wheel it yourself or do they assign somebody to push you?
They bring a nice little person comes and they, you know, and they're nice. And sometimes you have to beg them to stop at the bathroom, which I did this time. But but generally they're sort of lovely, nice people who have this job just dragging people all over the airports. And I'm telling you, this is the best thing about aging is the ability to be taken seriously when I go up there and say, I need a wheelchair.
That's brilliant. You know, I remember, I think at Disneyland, they used to do that.
Yeah.
People would get wheelchairs so they go to the front of the line.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, anyway, it's brilliant. So I flew through Amsterdam and then, so I'm there, everything goes crazy. And I ended up sort of having to go instead of right to Budapest, I went to Milan and then they lost my bags and blah, 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 blah. But I ended up, I mean, what a tragic life I'm leading. I'm just sitting here bragging about how much I hate an airport. I mean, shame on you. Just shame on you.
Well, our listeners are kind of jet setters. So, you know, that a lot of them have their own private jets. Well, you know, like like here at the radio station or jet helicopter.
Oh, well, I saw the helipad.
Yeah, that's what it's for.
I appreciate you sending that to pick me up.
Yeah,
that
was, well, you know, it's part of the courtesy.
You know, anyway, so I went to Budapest, which is a city I've always wanted to go to that for no particular reason other than it seemed like it was kind of fantastic. It's Eastern European and a lot of Mongol influence because, you know, everyone's taken over the Hungarians all the time.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. I say that it is as beautiful as Paris without all the nasty, sour French people.
Okay.
It's full of nice, warm, loving Hungarians.
Okay.
And
Zsa Zsa Gabor was...
Zsa Zsa, exactly.
Right, and Ava. Who didn't like them?
That's where the Rubik's Cube...
Yeah, the Rubik's Cube, you're right.
Yeah, so anyway, it's a fabulous city. I just loved it.
What did you do when you were there?
Went on a little Danube cruise. I met my niece who lives in California.
Okay.
And we went to an organ concert in the cathedral. And then we also went to the opera house, which was fantastic. And saw Aida. And our Aida was a little more Norma Desmond than Aida. She was about 4,000 years old. But, you know, she'd been doing this. You know, that this wig she was wearing is the same one she wore when she debuted in
Carol
the 30s.
Channing
But she could sing. So, anyway, and that was a blast. And we just wandered around and went to cafes and had, you know, delicious pastries and goulash and...
What's her... So my mom, when she made goulash, it was elbow macaroni... hamburger and a can of tomato sauce, but I bet you that's not how. With some celery, you got to have some soggy celery in there too.
Vegetables,
So, what's their goulash?
Their goulash is a little bit thinner than I thought it would be, but it's really all about the broth. It's fabulous.
Okay.
And then there's some celery and beef, like you know, steak, and potatoes.
Potatoes. So do they serve it over potato or is it a bowl?
It's a bowl.
It's like
it's
a
like
soup.
A soup. Yeah.
Okay.
It's like a soup.
Okay.
And it's good. I mean, it wasn't brilliant. I wouldn't go to Budapest for the food.
Yeah.
Although there's some good food to eat there. It's just not Hungarian food. It's not.
Yeah.
But it was comforting. So I enjoyed it.
Paprika on it.
A lot of paprika. Yeah.
Was there anything there that kind of surprised you? Like, oh, I didn't think I would find this in Budapest.
One of the things that was, again, it was so much more sophisticated in a way than I thought. I may have had too much of a, you know, post-Russian idea of what it would be like.
Yeah.
It's just, it's gorgeous and clean and sparkly and big, wide boulevards. And it's just fabulous. One of the things that I enjoyed is they have an area there called the Ruins, which is in the old Jewish quarter. And it was a bunch of old, dilapidated buildings that people moved in and just set up all these bars.
Oh.
And it's kind of dark and goofy and they have silly art up and weird chairs, and like, you know, every 30 feet there's a different bar, and it's all open, and there it was hot, so they were spraying mist on people, and it was fabulous. It was a great.
So it was like kind of like a guerrilla art kind of enclave, but for entertainment.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, for, and you know, for just for drinks and art, and it was just, it was super.
That sounds really,
yeah, it was
cool.
Really, really cool.
How was it? Pretty affordable there?
Yes, it was. Yeah. I went to England in the fall, and Paris, and Budapest is a bargain.
And it sounds like, did you have some bad experiences with French people in Paris, or is that just like the stereotype?
Well, yeah, I mean, my best friend growing up is French, so I hope she's not listening.
Okay.
Cool. Hi, Titi. bonjour. Paris was crowded, dirty, fast, cranky. I mean, I used to live in New York, and I love it. But London was so civilized.
Yeah.
And the cabs are civilized, and everything's pleasant.
Yeah.
And then in Paris, the cab driver was angry and smoking, and I wasn't ready for that. And we only were there for 2 days, so we also were like trying to power through.
Okay.
So yeah.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been to England, and I haven't been to Budapest, but my son's went to Hungary. He really liked it.
I really did.
Do they have like the Vlad the Impaler thing? That's not.
Yeah, that's not too far from.
That's not too far from there. Far.
I didn't go. It went so fast. We had so many things we wanted to do.
Yeah.
And suddenly, you know, happily, I don't mind giving up something on my to-do list for an extra glass of wine in the cafe.
Yeah, that's. I think that comes with age, right?
Yeah,
because like wanting to cross things off the list, and it's like, sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes it's really, it's almost a feather in your cap to say, these are the things I wanted to do, but I didn't do them because I did something better.
Yeah, what did you do today? Nothing.
Nothing.
I wandered. I sat in a cafe. I had some chocolate cake. I went to another cafe. I had some wine.
Yeah.
I had some more wine. And then I thought it'd be a good idea to have some more wine. And then I went something to eat. And then I took a nap.
And their wine is good.
Yes, Hungarian wine is very good. In fact, it's the oldest wine in Europe.
Okay, is it just, I mean, is it? They kind of go more sweet or dry?
It's a little more sweet.
A little more sweet.
But it's quite good. It's not like sick.
Not
sweet.
Cloying.
No, yeah.
Not like that Night Train.
No. Not that I've ever had that.
No.
Or MD 2020.
Mad Dog.
Never had that. No.
Yeah, you never bought a ticket, as they like to say.
Huh. Actually, in college, I had a bottle, and my mother was coming to visit, and I needed to find it so I could hide it, but I couldn't find it anywhere. And I realized I thought it just dissolved. I mean, the MD toilet just dissolved.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if I drank it, I have no recollection of it at all.
When I was in the fire department, the one that would always be the one that we'd get people was Four Loko.
I've never even heard
of that. Yeah. So it was like for a while, it was a carbonated or a caffeinated alcohol drink. Uh-huh. And I think they made them take the caffeine out of it because people get so screwed up. And then I'd say, how many Four Locos did you drink? And everybody always says they just had two, right?
So yeah, holding up four fingers.
Yeah,
I had two.
So I said, so you had two Four Locos. So that's eight Locos in toto to them. And they would scratch their head. And go. And just finally, after a while, say, yes. We're going to break for our 20 minute after the hour stuff. And then we're going to come back because I know, we're going to come back because it's what we do. But when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the show that you're in, Pippin, anything else you want to talk about. But
super.
Because that's been going on and you're rehearsing and we'll talk about the show. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to play our 20 minute after the stuff. You guys, you're all listening to Out and About on KYRS Medical Lake Spokane.
Hey there, folks. Join me for a musical trip along Americana Avenue. Now on Wednesday evenings from 6 to 8 p.m. Hear the greatest progressive songwriters from yesterday and today. Each week, I'll feature a specific artist and a vinyl spin of the week. It's music that plays to the human condition. Wednesdays at 6 on Thin Air Community Radio.
Your radio station, KYRS, actively supports the diversity of the Spokane area, celebrating the many voices that make up our region. Our volunteer-run station hosts a variety of shows that feature otherwise unheard perspectives and opinions. In a sense, KYRS is working against institutional racism, sexism, homophobia, and other forms of oppression simply by existing in opposition to mainstream media. Please make a pledge today by texting Give KYRS to the number 44321. Your support keeps KYRS operating during a time when our community needs free and open media the most.
This is your KYRS live and local calendar for June 24th through the 27th. Monday, open mic at Live Entertainment, Emily Nenny and Lucas Brookbank Brown at the District, and open mic with Myla Cree and Ben 10 at the Red Room. Tuesday, Jason Garrett Evans at the Rocket Market, Kyle Smith at the Chameleon, and Jerry Lee in the Groove, and Elijah Dallas at Zola. Wednesday, Nate Ostrander at True Legends, Tamarack Ridge Band at the Valley Eagles, Inland Beaches, and Eric Kegley at Zola, Dave McRae at the Nest at Kendall Yards, open mic with Derek Hart at the Checkerboard, and open jam at the Red Room. Thursday, Ron Green at Arborcrest, Buffalo Jones at Brick West, Time Baby at Coeur d'Alene Park and Brown's Edition, Slapshot at the Junkyard, the Dave Larson Group at Emma Roo's, DJ Storm at the Red Room, Datura, Cruel Velvet, and others at the Big Dipper, Mr. Sister and Matt Mitchell Music Company at Zola, and Cody Canada and the Departed at the District. For an entire hour of local musicians, tune into Sounds of Spokane every Sunday night at 8 on KYRS.
Four Seasons Herbal Guild presents the 8th Annual Spokane Herbal Fair with an E. June 28th and 29th, children's activities, face painting, tea, herbalist, and artisan vendors, classes on salves, tinctures, essential oils, wild crafting, and plant identification. No poultices, apparently, but we can work on that. 1832 West Dean, Spokane. Information online at SpokaneHerbalFair.org. And fair has an E at the end of it. And herbal, that has a silent H too. So SpokaneHerbalFair.org. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake. And I have my friend Eve Lupert here. And we're... Oh, my back. It's just, oh, my stiff back. We are talking all things Eve today. And we just talked about Eve as a Globetrotter. But one of the things Eve does, which I know Eve, I'm trying to think where we first met. Do you know where we first met?
It was at something at Stage Left when you were doing I'm My Own Wife.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if we've ever been in anything together.
No, we haven't.
Yeah. How about if I turn your microphone on? Would that be better?
I was just so funny, you guys. I was just really sad that you couldn't hear that. Okay.
Yeah. And I'm not going to repeat it. And you're not going to ever know
it was brilliant.
Where we met. You'll have to. That's special.
We don't.
That's special platinum. That special platinum edition only for platinum members only. Yeah, I was wondering, hey, you know, Eve's levels aren't too high there. Maybe I should turn up her microphone. Oh, maybe I should just turn it on. So you are in the play Pippin.
Yeah.
And then when does Pippin, that's going to be in August, right?
It's going to be the first 3 weeks in August.
Okay.
Because I was gone, they had rehearsals without me, and I came back and heard that sort of the first sing through of the whole show. And holy shlamoly, there are some wonderful singers in this, and
yeah.
I'm just beside myself. I'm so excited. I love Pippin. It's like, it was like the first. I mentioned this earlier. I watched the Tonys when it was on, and it just showed me what theater was possible. And I grew up at Civic Theater. I mean, I've been doing it since I was in junior high.
Really?
Yeah, okay. I was in Oliver in junior high. And it just changed everything that I understood about theater watching just this thing in the Tony. So Pippin's one of my favorite shows, and I haven't been doing very much. And when I saw Pippin, I thought, man, I would really like to play Bertha, the grandmother. Really like to. And I felt it was a sign. One of her lyrics is, I've known 66 years, you know, of fears and tears. And the only thing I trade them for is 67 more. And yesterday I was 66, and today I'm 67. So this part was written for me, Brad.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That is crazy.
So I'm very excited.
Yeah. So when you sing that song, it'll really mean something.
It does. It does. Yeah.
What's kind of the broad brushstrokes, the story of Pippin?
Yeah. It was a Fosse musical, Bob Fosse.
So dance moves. And
yeah. It's a lot of fabulous moods. Pippin is the story of Charles the Great's son. And he is a young man trying to find his corner of the sky, which happens to be a song. He's trying to figure out what he wants to do, and he wants to be important. And this group comes in and say, well, we'll help you figure that out. So he tries sex, and he tries war, and he gets all sorts of advice from all sorts of people along the way, trying to find out where he belongs. And that's sort of the story of Pippin.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Yeah. Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing. And I'm trying to think, the last thing I might have saw you in was Midsummer Night's Dream, maybe?
Yeah.
Was that?
That's the last thing I did, yeah.
Okay.
A couple of years ago.
Yeah, it was a couple of years ago. And that was really a good production.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was really nicely done.
And before that, I did Present Laughter at Civic. And I hadn't done anything for 40 years before that.
Really?
I had just retired, and I saw Present Laughter, and I thought, there's a part that I might be good at.
Yeah.
I didn't tell anybody, and I just went down there and auditioned because I thought, well, you don't have to humiliate yourself. Nobody has to know about this. And I got in. I was shocked.
Yeah.
And it was so much fun.
Because you are such a part of the community, too. I mean, you are a theater goer. I see you just about at everything. And you know, I mean, and we all, you and I are always running into each other at stuff. So you worked in human resources, is that right?
Yeah, I was in human resources, people development. I don't have a degree in it. I staggered into it. When I graduated from college and was looking for a job, I knew one person, and they had a job at an advertising agency called Shiat Day. And Shiat Day ended up being the agency of the decade and agency of the year.
Was that New York then?
It was eventually. I started in Los Angeles and then went to New York. They did the Apple 1984 commercial that's so famous with the, you know, throwing at the Big Brother. And they did the Energizer Bunny and an awful lot of things that you're
certainly familiar with. Yeah, big stuff.
Yeah. And so I went there sort of a floater, sort of a sub-secretary, because I just knew one person there. I drove in my car to L.A. just like the biggest rube you ever saw, just practically put a straw hat on me. And I went in and got this job. And then every once in a while I'd quit because I wanted to be an actor. And then I'd, you know.
Did you get gigs in L.A. when you were?
No. And I'd run out of money. And then they let me come back. I mean, Jay Shiat once, you know, said, well, happy first anniversary again, and said, you know, Eve, you're just like herpes. We think we're rid of you when you show up again. So he said this, by the way, in front of the person who was my new boss. So I felt really good about that. Anyway, so yeah. So and then there was a chance to go to New York, and they'd opened up an office there. And I said, you know, let me in, coach. And Jay said, all right. And so I got a different job. And he said, what do you want to do? And I said, media. Which was, you know, buying media and figuring out where to place the ads.
Okay.
And I did that for a while, and then I quit, and then I worked in the network department where they buy network television, which was fun because I get to go watch TV shows to see where they were going to place our ads.
Oh, sure.
And specials and things like that. So that was fun.
What year would this have been?
Oh, gosh.
About, do you think?
In that mid-80s.
Okay.
1980s.
I'm just trying to think of TV shows back then that you might have gotten to see.
North and South, I got to watch that
in
previews. And you know, there are people whose job, they sit in rooms all day and then write down where your commercials are slotted and then call all the advertisers to say, okay, you're in position 1A.
Oh, wow.
And somebody called me once and said, you're in 1A, which is the best one, but the scene right before is on V, that science fiction show. And the character in the show leans their head back and drops a rat down their throat.
And I remember that scene, right? Because their jaw dislocates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the commercial we had was a Pizza Hut commercial with Roseanne Barr. And it opens with her head back dropping the pizza in her mouth. And this one said, I don't know about you, but I just thought it was disgusting. I think you need to change it. So, but that was her job. What a cool job.
Oh, that is really cool.
I was born for that. Yeah. Anyway, so, you know, I quit and finally I decided I wanted to be in human resources. I'd kept a list of things I did well, things I didn't do well, things I liked to do and didn't like to do. And what I did well and liked to do, I looked at that and was shocked to say, oh my God, that's human resources.
Yeah.
So I mentioned it to them and they made me human resource director at one of the little subsidiaries. And then pretty soon I was the vice president of human resources for the whole shebang. And we were the first virtual office. So
cool.
I did that and I got to be on the cover of HR Magazine.
And now you're still in New York when this is going on?
Yeah.
And you wrote a book called Rules for the Road based on your experience as hiring and how to do job interviews.
And it's mostly how to not get fired. It's really for your first job. I remember there was a stairwell and I would often go in there to have, because it was pretty open concept office. So I had to have conversations with people. Sometimes I'd drag them into the stairwell. And I realized I've been in the stairwell with so many new employees crying and
and I bet you like it just echoes in the stairwell, the crying.
I hope so, because we needed drama. No, I don't know. I tried to be subtle, but you know, about the same stuff. And then I realized everyone makes the same mistakes.
Oh, interesting.
It's like you come in and you decide you're going to tell somebody off.
Yeah.
You know, have a dramatic moment. It's just like, you know, everybody already knows that guy's a poop.
Yeah.
It's not going to help you.
Yeah.
Or not liking what you're doing, it's not important enough, so you don't do it. You do something else that's interesting that nobody needs.
Right.
And they're paying you to do something. So,
yeah.
So I thought, what the heck? So I sat down and wrote sort of a humorous take at not getting canned from your first job.
And that's still
out of college.
On Amazon.
You can still get it on Amazon. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think, did you find like, I would think like with your acting chops and your experience that would be, that's kind of, you know, when you're an employee, you're playing a role.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean.
Yes. Many days in human resources, I pretended like I gave a damn. oh, what's wrong now, darling? Yeah. Is he mean to you? Oh, no. Precious. Yeah.
I used to, you know, for the fire department, you have a year of probation and they can fire you anytime during that year. And there's tests you have to take and all that stuff. But what usually would get a guy when they get to the stations would be attitude and, mm-hmm. you know, or maybe too much familiarity right off the bat when you don't know people.
Right. Or here's how we did it where I used to work.
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
Yeah. And so my thing was like, okay, let me let you in on a secret.
Yeah.
Working for the fire department is the best paying acting job in Spokane. It's a great gig. And a lot of it's improv.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. This first year, your job is to be, you're acting as a probationary member of the fire department. So let's talk about what that would, what is that character like? Mm. And so we would go through that. And this is not you.
Yeah.
This is not you. You have, after this year, when you're safe and sound, you have 20, 30 years to show us who you really are.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, maybe it's really bad who you really are, but then you're protected.
Right.
So let's just work. Let's see if you can pull it off and we'll give you bigger roles later. So that was always kind of my thing. I feel like the acting informs, I think can really inform a lot of what you do in a career?
I think it's the best thing that I ever stumbled into. And my niece did it, and now my great niece is doing it. She was in Fun Home. And she's doing The Little Prince at the Children's Theater.
Wow.
And she's just, I mean, she's the hardest working person in show business.
Yeah.
I mean, she's
well,
like
how, did, so you went to LC, right?
Yeah.
And then where'd you go to junior or middle school or junior high, whatever we called it
I
back
went
then.
To Sacagawea.
So you were just on the same program as my, you didn't go to Roosevelt, did you?
No, I was supposed to. I'm old enough. I was supposed to go to a school that nobody's ever heard of called Irving.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, down like at the bottom of Cedar, right close to where the freeways, it's gone now.
Okay.
And it was probably slated for closing, and my mother didn't want me to go there. She thought it was a cruddy school, and I'd have to start all over again in a couple years anyway. So she could be formidable when she wanted something, and she decided I should go to Wilson.
Oh, okay. Oh, Wilson was fashionable even back then.
Well, she felt I'd have better influences at Wilson.
Yes. Yeah.
Which was wrong. And so I went to Wilson and used to ride the bus up there, the city bus, because I was just outside the district, so they wouldn't let me ride on the school bus. So
that'd be a heck of a walk.
Yeah, so
up
I was,
to 25th,
you know,
yeah.
First grade getting on a city bus all the time.
Wow. Yeah, so my kids went to Roosevelt, Sacagawea, and then LC.
LC, yeah.
And so did you start doing drama and stuff in junior high school?
I was always interested in it. My father was a musician and a drummer, and he used to play at the Davenport Hotel, and they used to do little comedy skits. So I learned all this corny stuff from my dad.
Yes.
From the time I was little. The first song I learned to sing was "It's a Treat to Beat Your Feet on the Mississippi Mud," and I did the hand things too. And then I would, Dad taught us this, where my brother would come out and he'd introduce me. He'd say, "Well, we've got 12 beautiful girls for you tonight, and when the 6 of them get out here, I want you to give all 3 of them a nice hand, because they're both good girls. And here she is, Eve." and then I would come out and sing "Inka Dinka Doo."
Oh, well, a little Jimmy Durante.
Yeah. Inka Dinka Doo. And so I was doing silly stuff from the time I was tiny. And then in 7th grade, I fell madly in love with Jack Wilde, who played the Artful Dodger in the movie Oliver.
Okay.
I loved him so much. I wrote him all the time, and you know, slathered my bedroom with pictures of him, and I was total teen crush.
Oh,
and,
cool!
So in 7th grade, I wrote a small one act of Oliver, so that I could portray the Artful Dodger myself.
Oh, nice!
Yeah, so we did that in 7th grade.
Okay, cool. And so that was just a little one act play, and you did that, and then you get into LC, and you wind up bigger productions there.
Doing shows there. Yeah. I was one of the drama nerds and was good enough friends with Miss Carswell, God bless her, that I used to be able to say, "Oh, Miss Carswell, I had a show at Civic last night and I'm so tired." And she'd say, "Well, do you need a nap?" I said, "I do." And then I'd get to go backstage behind the curtains and fall asleep on the sofa that was on the stage.
Oh, my goodness.
And every once in a while, like, they'd open the curtains for a class, and I'd just be laying there drooling. And I got away with a lot of stuff. And she...
But that must have been pretty cool.
It was fabulous.
I'm already working at Civic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so tired. I'm a professional, of course. I'm so tired. The arts are taking so much from me. And you know, and then I start in junior high is when I went to audition for Oliver at Civic.
Wow.
So I did that in Spokane Youth Theater.
Wow. And so then it was, you took a 40-year break, you said?
I pursued acting. So that's why when I graduated, I got in my car and I went to Los Angeles and got nowhere. And then got the chance to go to New York. And I went to New York and I was part of the Roundabout Conservatory Theater there and was rejected by a better and better class of people, but couldn't quite earn any sort of a living.
Right, right.
Yeah, so when I went into HR, I decided I'll leave that reckless youth in the past.
And then, so how did you get back to Spokane?
Well, how did I do that? The firm I was with got bought.
Okay.
And I didn't care for them. And so I decided it was time to come back west. I have a wonderful family. This has always felt like coming home.
Oh, yeah. Luperts are all over the place. And they're all really active in politics and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're all a little bit lunatic. My mother took to her bed for a week after Nixon was reelected. I'm not making that up. And
oh, she would die now.
Yeah. I worked for USAID and for the Obama administration. And every day I would go to work and think how proud my mother would be that I worked for Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And then every day I would go home almost in tears saying, government doesn't work. What's the it's all about the wrong stuff. But I'm still for government. Anyway, I was talking about something. I don't even know.
Oh, we were talking about how did you get to Spokane?
Oh, right. So, when I decided to leave that company and I moved back and I moved to Seattle. So I lived in Seattle for a long time.
And that's a good transition to Spokane. Yeah,
and I went to the U. So, and my sister lived there and I sponged off of her. So, what happened? Oh, I got a
abduction.
Chance.
You don't remember.
I know. I was.
You were abducted and probed.
Yes. Yes. And I just want to say thank you. I went to D.C. and then and worked for USAID and then came back here and couldn't find a job for all the money in the world and had a couple of just terrible jobs. And I was terrible. I was just terrible at them. And then finally found a gig that I liked and did that for a few years and then said, I'm ready to retire. And I did.
Oh, good on you. Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to come back after I do my 20-minute till the hour. People see a pattern here, probably. So we'll be right back talking to Eve Lupert, and we're going to be having more fun for a little bit longer here. Woohoo! All right, here we go. Stay tuned.
Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. for Solidarity Spokane, the Inland Northwest's local labor hour, hosted by Cat Sabotage, elevating the voices of everyday workers and worker organizations, fighting for your rights in the workplace and fostering community solidarity. Join us here to reclaim control over your own destiny by reclaiming the conditions and products of your labor. That's Mondays at 4 p.m. here on KYRS Thin Air Community Radio. An injury to one is an injury to all.
KYRS is grateful for the many listeners who have donated their vehicles to us. You can join them by donating your unwanted car, truck, minivan, motorcycle, and more. Vehicles are picked up free of charge, sold, and the proceeds help KYRS bring you the programs you know and love. It's easy to donate your vehicle, and it's tax deductible. Just call our toll-free line to arrange a free pickup. 855-KYRS-CAR. That's 855-597-7227. Thank you.
Out and About receives support from Boots Bakery and Lounge, specializing in vegan, bistro fare, and gluten-free baked goods. Located in the Saranac Commons, 19 West Main Street, open 7 a.m. through 7 p.m., Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. through 5 p.m. Sundays. Full menu and information at bootsbakery.com. And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, and I'm talking to my pal Eve Lupert, and we are talking, like, I think we've covered how we just came back talking about how you came back to Spokane. And, and so what was when you had your first show back at Civic Theater, had it changed much, or did you come back like, oh, this is like old familiar ground?
It was so familiar. And you know, the names that the theater's named after, Betty Tomlinson and all these, you know, I knew all of those characters.
Okay.
So it was really fun. Margot Ogden and Firth Chu, I knew all of them.
Right.
So that was very fun. What had changed is how lively the theater universe is in Spokane. It's fabulous.
Yeah, isn't it?
There's a lot going on, and it is an extremely generous community. I love when I was here before, there was, they would try to have some things, but you know, you could only be in one, you could only be in civic, and then you couldn't do the other ones.
Yeah. Like interplayers.
Yeah. And, interplayers. It was like us versus them. And it is not like that at all anymore. It's so fun and so warm and so generous.
Yeah. When interplayers closed up, I thought, oh, this is a terrible thing for Spokane. I mean, I thought this is going to be the beginning of the end of theater in Spokane. And it was just the opposite, you know?
So. No, stage left, I give it lots of credit for doing that. And, and, you know, there's been lots of the Shakespeare and the Spark, the Spokane Shakespeare Society. And, and other things that are going on. And it's just, it's lovely that there's so much happening.
And there's so many. And it's funny when you tell somebody like, oh, I'm in this play. And they say, what is that at what theater? And you go, well, it's a come back when it's Spokane Ensemble Theater, and then all these ones that, you know, they start up and they close down. They live their life, and right now we've got Blue Comet is sort of in that position of not shutting down. They're going strong, but I mean they kind of play where they can play, but they usually have like a core group of people that do things in Spokane Shakespeare Society, and I just love, you know, so it's kind of like, well, okay, it's theater, but they don't have a theater,
right?
You know,
exactly.
I like that, but it's funny, you know, you get on stage with people and you feel like, for me anyways, I always feel like I'm home, kind of like how I'd feel in the morning when I'd walk into the fire station and I'd be like, I'm here to do a job, but I feel very comfortable, you know, in this lovely place that we're in, you know.
Yeah, this is where I belong.
Yeah, so it sounds like things got a little bit nicer while you were gone in the theater community.
More warm and generous. Yeah. And I think the quality of the work at Civic and every place else is much better than it was, too.
Yeah. That Valley Summer Theater, they're just like, you go see their stuff, too, and they're right up there.
So
it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. And you know, the thing is, the problem with that is all of us are, if you're in, it's so much stuff to go see. So lots of times you don't get to see your friends.
Yeah.
Cats. I never got to see Cats.
I didn't see Cats either. Yeah.
And I really wanted to see it, but it was like every night there was something going on.
I wasn't here.
I did too. And I know the person who designed the set, and it was, you know, I know folks, lots of folks who were in it, and it's like, I was kind of bummed out. Now, not to end things on a bad note, well, we still have like 8 minutes here, but you're also involved very politically, I kind of noticed that. And so how do you keep your hope up during these times? Do you feel optimistic about this?
No, I'm terrified. I'm really terrified.
Are you usually kind of a pessimist when it comes to elections?
Oh no,
really?
I'm Polly Stinking Anna. No,
really?
Yeah, I have a kind of a unique experience here. I worked both for Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
And I worked for Donald Trump at the ad agency. He was Trump Casinos was a client of ours, and he was hideous. He would want to do things. I mean, casino advertising is very controlled.
Yeah.
And he would want to do stuff he wasn't supposed to do. And so he'd call lower and lower in the organization to try to intimidate someone into doing something that would have gotten the agency into terrible trouble.
Sure.
One day, this is an apocryphal story, I was in between working there, so I was filling in for Jay Shiat's secretary because he went through them like, you know, Murphy Brown. And so I would sit there, and Jay came up to me with a letter. He'd had a conversation with Donald, and Donald was just screaming about something and just being horrible. And Jay said, "Well, if you don't like it, Donald, get out of the casino business," and hung up the phone on him.
Yeah.
A few days later, a letter comes to Jay that he's just, you know, cursing him out and on and on and on. So Jay had this beautiful cardstock stationery that said Jay Shiat on it, and he hand wrote a note and said, "Donald, I think you should know some lunatic has stolen your letterhead and is writing incomprehensible letters to people. Love, Jay." And I got to put that in the mail, and he fired us immediately, and everyone was so happy. We had a big party. So I knew.
Yeah.
Everyone,
you knew what we were going to be getting.
I was just devastated. That was the worst night of my life, watching him win. It really was. And Yeah, I'm terrified. I'm a woman. How can any woman think, oh, I'll let some government guy know better about my own body than mine? It's like, if I don't own my body, I'm like cattle.
Yeah.
You can't own me. You can't do it. You can't legislate yourself into owning me.
Yeah.
And yet they try. Yeah. And I'm terrified.
Yeah.
So I hope everybody votes. I hope everybody gets their GOP friends drunk and locks them in a closet on November 5th, like they did in Pickwick Papers, which I thought was genius. And do whatever you can to vote, to try to talk sense to people, to try and encourage them to know this isn't a football team.
Right. It's not a popularity contest. And it's, you know, and it's like, I think when he got elected, part of me was like, well, okay, I think he's an awful human being and has been a failure at everything that he's done. But maybe now that he has this wonderful thing, he'll go down his history. Maybe he'll look at how history books will treat him and he'll be a good leader. But he wasn't. He was awful. Awful in every way.
He doesn't care about history. So he wouldn't. Yeah. He doesn't have those sort of social cues that other people might have to make them make decisions that are in the greater good.
Yeah, he doesn't care about the greater good. Or, you know, and he's just a vindictive person that...
Petty, small.
Petty. But we know that now, right? Everybody has seen that. So there should never be a person like me who says, well, maybe it'll be okay. Because it won't be this time.
Because he's already said he's going to be a dictator.
Yeah.
He's already said he's going to have, you know, revenge.
Do you think there's some people that really like just watching a train wreck?
I think they do. I think there's some people who maybe have felt put down by society, and they feel like Donald Trump is their guy who's, you know, sticking it to the intellectuals.
And they love it. You know, schooling the libtards.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, what really makes the libtards upset is when you punch yourself in the face. And it's like, and they do. They just punch themselves in the face all day long. You know, and it's so I don't know. But I don't know. I feel kind of optimistic.
Do you? I hope you're right.
Yeah. And you know, I think that people do like to see a train wreck, but they have to realize that they're on the train. It does go around a corner, so you are kind of watching it.
Yeah.
But you're on that train. You will wreck.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, it's like, just look at the Supreme Court for no other reason.
Oh my God.
At the Supreme Court appointments. You know, and if Biden wins a second term, I hope the first thing he does is say, you know what, we're owed four. We're owed four now, and we're putting four more on the you stole one and then and right off the bat, and these last three we're owed for.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean I agree. I think one of the things that just went terribly wrong is, quite frankly, they're both too old. And I love Biden. I met
Biden. Probably the most effective
DC
president I've ever seen.
Magnificent
in my too. In my lifetime.
Decent, honorable person, which I value.
Yeah.
But they're both too old.
Yeah.
And it's time. I mean, I'm considerably younger than they are. Okay, that's not really true, but I am younger.
Oh, you're considerably younger.
But it's time. It's not time for us anymore. It's time for, you know, there's a generation coming up that don't have our prejudices, don't have our fears, don't have our closed minds and, you know, sense of certainty.
Yeah.
And it's time for them.
I love that generation too. I got to work with them a lot in the fire department. I found them very professional what they did, very serious about what they did, but their job didn't define who they were. Also, they were very wise in that regard. And I thought, you know, I almost felt apologetic about what we're leaving them with, you know, because a lot of, I think during my time, there was a lot of worshiping stupidness.
Yes.
You know, like, it was cool to be stupid, and now nobody can afford that anymore.
no, there's too much at stake. Yeah. I mean, you really have to know what's real.
Yeah.
And it's harder and harder to find what's real. So, you know, get your news from several sources. And I don't want to be lecturing here, but I just, you know, I don't know where to go if he gets elected, but I'll consider anywhere.
No, I'll stay here till they put me in the
really?
Concentration camp. So, because being a trans woman, I'm probably not high. I'm not gonna get any cabinet positions. I don't think.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
nor would you want to be in his cabinet, by the way.
Oh no.
Yeah.
No, I just think that would be awful. That'd be awful on every level.
It's interesting that you say you would stay here.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, my thing is, I'm really motivated by spite. Well, a lot of people don't know that about me, but I am motivated by spite. Yeah. And it's like, you're not going to make me move away, and you're not going to make me sad, and you're not going to make me sorry,
good.
And you're not going to make me angry. I'm going to keep making art, and I'm going to keep having fun.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to let you guys get what you want, and that's what you want.
Yeah.
So forget it. Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, we're out of time.
Oh, my gosh, already?
I know.
I prepared a song.
No. We have a couple minutes.
No. Thank you so much. This was really fun.
I had such a good time.
Go to stage left, everybody.
Yeah, go to stage left, everybody. Okay. All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. You are, just say it one more time, listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane. We are probably joining Jim Hightower or Amy Goodman, mm-hmm. whatever. Just stay tuned. Why don't you? Thanks. Bye.
Opposition to Governor Hochul's move spans generations. We'll speak with MTA board member David Jones, head of the Community Service Society, about how $15 billion in funds from congestion pricing would have been used to expand and improve New York's mass transit system. And we'll speak with climate activist Keanu Arpels Josiah with Fridays for Future NYC. He just graduated high school. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange could be just hours away from freedom after he accepted a plea deal with the U.S. government and was released from a U.K. prison. Assange took off from London's Stansted Airport Monday, ending a 12-year-long ordeal that saw him take shelter at the Ecuadorian embassy for 7 years, followed by 5 years in Belmarsh Prison to avoid extradition to the United States, where he faced up to 175 years in prison for publishing classified documents exposing U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. Julian Assange's jet has stopped in Bangkok to refuel before it continues on to Saipan in the Northern Mariana Islands, a U.S. Commonwealth in the Pacific Ocean, where he's expected to plead guilty to one espionage charge of conspiring to unlawfully obtain and disseminate classified national defense information. He will then fly to his home country of Australia to be reunited with his family. Julian's wife, Stella Assange, spoke to Reuters earlier today.
Of course. I mean, I think that the correct course of action from the U.S. government should have been to drop the case entirely. We will be seeking a pardon, obviously. But the fact that there is a guilty plea under the Espionage Act in relation to obtaining and disclosing national defense information is obviously a very serious concern for journalists and national security journalists in general.
We'll have more on this story after headlines. We'll speak with Julian's brother and other advocates for his freedom. In Gaza, Israeli attacks have killed dozens of Palestinians over the past day, including 14 people who were sheltering in UN-run schools in northern Gaza. Another attack on Khan Yunis killed at least 10 Palestinians as they were either seeking or helping shield aid supplies. UNRWA head Philippe Lazzarini offered a stark assessment of the situation in Gaza 9 months into Israel's slaughter.
Gaza has been decimated. For more than two